This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for listening to be a part. You can contribute at 855-752-4842. Jess P.S. working hard on the board and the phones. And jazzed as hell, Harvey K., our favorite Delano Democrat, a professor emeritus of democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. It's 5 o'clock on Mondays, and Harvey joins us usually at this time. Harvey, great to see you, man. Thanks for joining us.
Good to see you, and I'm really... Well, I should say excited, but I'd be very happy to respond to Joe's question from the end of the last segment.
Yes.
You know, late in the 4 o'clock hour.
Yes. Fine caller, Joe, talking about the disasters out in California and the response or lack thereof and criticism, certainly by the MAGAs and the Republicans. But she brought up FDR. And Harvey, what's your take?
Well, it's really, what's interesting is FDR, not only Teddy Roosevelt had an interest in the environment conservation, but FDR was very determined to address questions of the environment to begin with, not simply for the sake of the environment itself, but also for the sake of the humanity that lived in the state of New York, where he was governor before he became president of the United States, and then all the more when he became president of the United States. And I'll start by way of an example here in Wisconsin. When FDR was elected, in his first 100 days, they had an amazing program or initiatives to enact programs and laws. And what was created in the first 100 days was something that a lot of Americans were a little suspicious of, but ended up being, in many ways, the most welcome and the most embraced of all the initiatives. And that was the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps. And here in Wisconsin, the CCC was very active in creating parks and also in fighting soil erosion, especially out in western Wisconsin and southwestern Wisconsin. But there's another even bigger example I can give you of what transpired. We all know, well, at least I hope we've all heard of the novel by John Steinbeck, The Grapes of Wrath, which is, of course, the trials and tribulations of the families that suffered the Dust Bowl.
Yeah.
From northern Texas through Oklahoma, I mean, the entire sort of Plain States area, you might say. And when FDR became president, the Dust Bowl was really setting in. And of course, we end up with, in quotes, the Okies heading west to California. Well, in the course of the administration, the first few years, they decided that there was only one thing they could do, and it wasn't simply, you know, to address the needs of the Okies by setting up certain kinds of agricultural camps to try to at least alleviate the troubles that many of them had when they got to California. They decided it was imperative to not allow the Dust Bowl to go unanswered itself. And they created an agency whose name I'm forgetting right now, whose task it was to plant trees, vast windbreaks. Now, why was that necessary? Because we think of the Midwest and the Plain States as having a phenomenal agricultural base in the soil. But it was the case that in the Plain States, the soil was actually not very deep. And when you cultivated it, it could easily blow. And the winds of the Dust Bowl did just that. It blew Dust Bowl soil, dust, as far east in some cases, New York. There were cases where New York City and other cities were affected by it.
Yeah.
Not unlike the fires that have come out of the Northwest and out of California.
Smelling the smoke here in Wisconsin. Yeah.
Smell, exactly. So they decided the thing to do is you can't end the wind. I mean, that itself is impossible. But they knew that if you could set up these vast forests and windbreaks in parts of the Plain States, it would alleviate the troubles that these farmers would experience in the future. So, I mean, they worked at addressing the very kinds of things that right now Republicans are saying, oh, I mean, forget it, right? I mean, let them take care of themselves. But let's also consider the fact that the question of the growth of population and cities and housing in the environment of the Southwest leaves. I mean, that was a tragedy to have allowed that kind of development. I mean, I'm telling everyone they should have stayed behind in Wisconsin or Oklahoma or anything else, but it is the case. There should have been much better planning. Having said that, there has been action. I mean, the Republicans right now are lying about the Democrats. The Democrats may well have failed in the short term, but they're lying about the Democrats as if they're the ones who created the situation. Right. It's the big businesses that decided they were going to take advantage of people's desires to move to areas like California. And thus you get that the kinds of concentrations of population that you do. But in any case, yeah, FDR, and by way of the New Deal, and we could have seen such if the Green New Deal proposed by AOC and the senator whose name I'm forgetting right now, if the Green New Deal had taken any hold on the congressional imagination, we might well have been able to be in a better position now to address these kinds of things. I mean, I don't want to make too much of this because we get our own disasters possibly, but right now, as I've said to my sister and some other people around the country, just thank God you're not living in Southern California.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That's Harvey Kaye, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, you bring up an interesting point. And while I don't take the criticism from MAGA and Republicans very seriously, if there's a policy change to be attached, you talked about, you know, planting these trees and the efforts of FDR back during the Dust Bowl days. Well, that's a different policy, right? They had to change farming procedures. There was some changes. Do you see what do you think? Do you have any opinion on what Southern California could have done differently, given these circumstances? From the reporting from last week, you know, when everyone's got their taps on, you know, and the pressure's down, it doesn't matter how much water there is or isn't, it's not gonna do anything. When the winds are 100 miles an hour, you know, a hose isn't gonna get it done, Harvey. So, what's your opinion? I'm not sure you're an environmentalist or anything like that, but what's your take on what Southern California and California themselves could potentially do going forward to mitigate these kinds of risks?
Well, I honestly do not know specifically what they can do, because I've actually only been in Southern California a couple of times. Everything I know about Southern California I garnered from television. But no, I'm exaggerating a little bit. But it is the case that, consider this, consider the troubles at the lower, where the Colorado River is flowing south through the states in the Southwest to Mexico, and eventually was supposed to, you know, get out to the ocean. I mean, we've allowed river sources, and literally we've wasted water, and they've exploited water resources in ways that make it very difficult. I want to remind you that it was not long ago, well, at least not long ago since I've been living in Wisconsin, that people in the Southwest wanted us to export water from the Great Lakes to them. Now, that to me is outrageous. Okay, that's outrageous. I mean, it's unbelievable. So what can be done besides setting up pipes from the Great Lakes is start figuring out, I'll be crude about it, start figuring out if Southern California can handle the population it has given the available water resources.
It becomes a mathematical equation. Hell, I saw Chinatown with Jack Nicholson, Harvey. I mean, I know how important water is to California. Folks, that's Harvey.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. You know what? I just saw that film for the first time this past summer in New York.
Oh, no way. Son-in-law.
Yeah, for the very... No, actually, I saw it earlier, but I forgot half of it, and I got reminded.
So it's still a classic, right? Jack Nicholson? Oh, so good.
I'll put it on my list.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I got Jess with a running list here. A lot of movies she hasn't seen yet, so we're going to put out some
assignments. Jess, have you seen Grapes of Wrath, the film version of
I
the
have
novel?
Not seen the film. I read the book.
Everybody read the book, man, in high school.
I've got a second edition copy of the book with some of the pages printed out of order.
I did a movie podcast and a political podcast with people in which I was talking about the Grapes of Wrath. So I reread the novel, and I'm convinced all the more now John Steinbeck was America's greatest novelist, and The Grapes of Wrath, I don't think there's a better novel in American literature.
I might have to read it again as an adult, but being forced to read things like that when I was in high school just kind of leaves a...
Well, whenever someone tells you to do something.
I will not do it. The answer is always no. Harvey Kay, he's a professor emeritus of democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, how is democracy holding up these days? And specifically, we've had the sentencing of the president-elect, which is a big fat nothing. So he's a convicted felon with no fine, with no jail time, no probation, no monitor.
No nothing.
No drug testing, you know, no peeing in a bottle.
Oh, that could have been so interesting.
You know, I mean, so what do you think, what's your opinion on how all that is kind of slowly wrapped up?
Well, for some years now, and Trump is like the cherry on top of all this, the political and economic elites have been getting away with, in quotes, murder. They have been getting away with stuff. And ask yourself, you know, the average working person sees this, and what do they think? They think, one, there's no reason to have any trust in the elites.
True.
Which probably was always the case, but then the question is, well, then what are they going to think? Well, if they feel themselves without power, they're going to think, well, I got to talk about this in terms of, what do I really have to obey the law? Do I really have to cultivate in my children the idea that you have to obey the law for the sake of your fellow citizens? If indeed we have a president who's a convicted felon, right? Give me a break. That's exactly the situation. But this is not just Trump. I mean, this goes back to the 2008, 9, 10 Great Recession, when the Obama administration failed to prosecute the bankers.
Declined. Didn't fail. They declined.
Declined. Absolutely. So, I mean, it's been this ongoing thing for, what is that now? How many years is that? 20 years? I don't know.
Yeah, right.
How far back we go, right?
Oh, and further than that, I mean, go back to the FDR days. I know you like to harken back to those days with, you know, Robert Barron's and the whole thing and trust busting. I mean, it is the rich are going to do the rich thing. I guess my question, and maybe we'll have to carry this over to the next segment, is yes, though that is the observation. As a law-abiding citizen of this country, well, generally law-abiding, depends what state I'm in, I find this wholly inadequate. I find it hypocritical, and I find it kind of pointless. I mean, why bother giving someone a conviction if there's no consequence? Hell, you know, I'll go do all the things and get the advantage of my crime and take the conviction if nothing happens to me. Folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show. That's Harvey Kay. Come back with us, 855-752-4842. We'll discuss more of the quote-unquote conviction. Also, apparently, perhaps some of the J6 report. Jack Smith resigned over the weekend. His report on January 6th will be allowed. We might be able to see that as soon as midnight tonight. Come back with us. 855-752-4842.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, joins me this hour. You can do so as well, 855-75-CIVIC. Kind of lamenting this conviction of Donald Trump getting away with it. And whatever benefit he garnered, Harvey, from cutting those checks and posting things incorrectly and the benefit he received from that activity, there's been no consequence to it. And I guess this is kind of an ongoing story, man. It seems like, you know, the history continues to repeat itself with the rich and the powerful and the connected taking advantage of those positions and basically working the rest of us over, living by rules that, you know, not living by the rules that we have to live with. And with your affinity for FDR. Can you give me a snapshot into the mindset, perhaps, of what the people, what the citizens were thinking? How did a guy like FDR connect to bring people together? Because I got to tell you, man, I believe these kinds of things would not happen if we felt like we had a sense of urgency, if we have a sense that if we band together, we could make changes. I just feel like back in those days, it seemed a little more unified, at least on the citizen level, not us v them, but certainly concerned about the power of the rich and connected.
You know, I'll tell everyone, this was not a setup question. I didn't know that you were going to ask me that question.
Nor did I, man. It's this radio.
but just before we came on, just before I entered the studio by way of the StreamYard, I decided I was going to post something about the gross inequalities and FDR's view of the imperative of containing the power, at least of the economic elite. And then I'll come back to the question in the more general sense. He said, this was in 1935, he said, social unrest and a deepening sense of unfairness are dangers to our national life, which we must minimize by rigorous methods. People know that vast personal incomes come not only through the effort or ability or luck of those who receive them, but also because of the opportunities for advantage which government itself contributes. Therefore, the duty rests upon the government to restrict such incomes by very high taxes. Now, he called for high taxes on the rich, not only because they needed, as he saw, they needed the taxes to pursue the programs he had in mind. He believed that the gross inequalities in income literally empowered these folks to become economic royalists. And if they become economic royalists, democracy itself is severely threatened. And I do want to say that if people have a look at some of the works I've been pursuing these last many years, one of the things I discovered in writing those is that FDR, in many ways, actually campaigned against the Gilded Age, against this privileged elite. In fact, he was called by many of them a traitor to his class because he came from the elite. But he was determined, he really was, to limit the incomes and wealth of the wealthy for the sake, not only, as I said, of the New Deal, but for the sake of democracy. And whether it was during the 30s, Great Depression, or later during the war years, he sought ways to enact or get Congress to enact laws limiting how much wealth could be accumulated, because he saw that as coming at the expense of working people. Now, I would also add that the FDR administration, all 12 years of it, and this I picked up from other historians as I entered into the work, was probably, despite the vast scale of government activity, the least corrupt administration ever in American history up to that point. Okay. So I mean, FDR's view of corruption was you go after it and you find folks who you can trust to occupy positions in your cabinet who are not out, you know, to fill their own bank accounts, or like in the case of somebody who I won't bother to name, everyone will know. Okay, you don't seek to cut billions from the federal budget in order to enhance your $350 billion bank, you know, of wealth.
Well, if you can't use your money to get yourself some more money, what's the point of the money, Harvey? I'd give it all away for just a little bit more. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin Green Bay. Okay, Harvey. So then where did that go wrong? Was it Reagan? At what point did, because it seems like people were buying into it. The guy got elected, right? The tax rates were high. We didn't have quite the disparity we do now. It's seemingly, to my opinion, I think the facts would probably bear that out. And now we see, you see Bezos and you see Elon Musk. You see these folks flexing their wealth, power, man. They're using it. They're using it to shape opinion. They're using it to shape legislation. They're shaping governments. I mean, Musk is over, you know, once he got done with the election here, he starts, you know, poking his nose into Europe, man. This guy continues to go. So at what point do you think we went from this thought of FDR to use these policies to limit the wealth and the corruption that would come from that? Where did that go wrong, man?
Okay. It began, and I hate to speak, once upon a time it was easy to speak of this guy because he was alive and he just passed away recently. It began in the latter half of the Carter years. Carter sought to empower business. He wanted to liberate business from the constraints of the FDR and Lyndon Johnson years. But it was during the Reagan administration when we saw, I mean, throughout the 1970s, the wealthy basically contributed to initiatives that would attack the idea of government itself, calling it big government, attack unions, calling it big unions. I mean, they wanted to reduce the pressure upon themselves to pay the taxes that might be fair. Don't forget it. The highest tax rate ever on the rich was instituted in the Eisenhower years, you know? So anyhow, yes, during the Reagan years. But the point is, it continued. Whether it was a Republican or a Democrat, the practice continued of letting the rich get richer and richer while working people, ever since the early 70s, hardly saw any increase in their incomes and standard of living.
It is. It's terrible. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy, you can stick around for the remainder of the hour. Pew Research, Harvey, from January 9th, 2025. Economic inequality seen as major challenge around the world. Most say rich people's political influence is a big contributing factor. We're going to come back and talk about this with Harvey K. Plus some of your calls, 855-752-4842.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. It's a phone line. It's a text line. Tom from Jackson. Hi, Dom. Great guest, Harvey K. Yes, he is a great guest. He is Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, the tax rates back from the FDR days, we talk about the wealth and what's changed from then to these days and all that. But even at 91%, I mean, the effective tax rate wasn't that, man. People had deductions and so forth. They weren't really paying that. My understanding is probably more like half of that. The top 1% probably paying more like 40 to 50%.
Well, that's still a hell of a...
Well, yeah, it's a lot more than it is today. Do you think there's something to be said about being realistic about that? I mean, it's a 90% tax rate, but then you can take off your mortgage interest deduction, your meals and entertainment, you know, your travel to whatever, and next thing you know, you work it all down and it's not nearly that much. Because if we're talking about really having the impact, I mean, we could have a 40%, 45%, 50% tax rate with a minimal deductions for the super uber wealthy and effectively get the same kind of result, don't you think?
In my head, I'm just, look, that marginal tax rate, I think is the way it was referred to.
Well, the marginal tax rate versus the effective tax rate, right? There's a marginal, right? But yeah, then you did get all your deductions, and there were a lot more back then.
I would stick to that for people of who are billionaires, and I would basically just say, you know, but take out the deductions. I believe, look. Stephanie Kelton, who's what they call the sort of queen of modern monetary theory, she argued the number one that we have a deficit myth, and she got a bestseller by arguing that. But what's interesting is in her book, She talks about the fact, well, that doesn't, the fact that government can run deficits up to a certain point doesn't mean that you should not tax the rich, because by not taxing the rich, we've now allowed the billionaires to create what she called, and I have called, the democracy deficit. When you've got people, when you've got billionaires, multi-billionaires, it sounds so weird to say multi-billionaires, doesn't it?
Right.
People who have more than $1 billion. The way in which they're shaping government is utterly insidious. They're buying. Weren't you blown away and shocked when Musk said, if you signed a petition or something to that effect, he'd give you $1 million?
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah. To get people to register to vote. Yeah, vote your registration drive for $1 million a pop. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it was pretty much, you know, MAGA's come hither kind of thing.
Yep,
okay.
Correct.
No, I mean, seriously speaking, and right now he wants to underwrite the fascist party in Germany.
Yeah.
And he wants to underwrite, you know, the essentially
America
fascist
too.
Party in England. Yeah, right. And well, he sees the Republicans as just that kind of party, I expect, because that's where he's putting all his eggs right now. I mean, this is just utterly outrageous. I mean, forget, maybe we should go from taxation to confiscation sometimes. I know. You won't be able to have me on anymore if I talk like that.
855-752-4842. Well, they do have, asset forfeiture. So if you get caught mm-hmm. driving down the street with a bag of weed and a bag full of $100 bills, that can just take it and assume you're a drug dealer and you got to go fight to get it back. I mean, well, that happens to regular
folks. Wait a minute.
We
just saw a felon. Look, we have a president. He's a felon.
Harvey K, Professor Emeritus of Democracy, University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. The Republicans over the weekend, or maybe up last Friday, there's still talk of them threatening to basically pay for Donald Trump's extension of his 2017 tax cuts, which will cost us, you know, trillions of dollars, by cutting Medicaid, you know, some of these safety net programs. I mean, it's not only are they flaunting it, Harvey. They're coming after us. They're coming after the folks. And these are, you know, people pay into these things, man. It seems like we're down and they're trying to kick us when we're down here, Harvey. How do we get people to rise up against this kind of mentality?
Well, you know, what first came to mind when you were going into this question was to think that back in the 1950s, McCarthy was finally called out. That's Joe McCarthy was finally called out by someone said, "Have you no shame?" I think that was something to that,
yep,
that effect.
Yep.
Well, I mean, clearly speaking, the Democrats, well, they're pretty shameful most of the time of late too. But there has to be some way in which Republicans are called out for their shameless behavior, number one. Number two, it isn't just, I mean, clearly we have to concern ourselves. The caller Joe had talked about, aren't we all in this together?
Mm-hmm.
Well, clearly we're not all in this together. But what we do need to know is that there are solidarities which can make a difference. And right now, we all know that that Trump won, and he didn't win by a landslide or anything else. John Nichols in The Nation has done a good job of reminding us mm-hmm. that he won really by a hair's breadth, you might say. And it also is the case that for example, in AOC's district in New York, the fact is that even as he increased by 11% his vote in her district, she did all the better. So there's obviously a lot of contradictions. Go to Florida. They enacted the 15%, the $15 an hour minimum wage. Go to the other states down there in the plains, like Missouri and others, which now have, and Nebraska, which said, well, no, we're not going to fund religious schools. That kind of stuff. There are vast numbers of working people who are looking to be effectively organized, whether it's in labor unions or in state, you know, in public interest groups. We have got to support these initiatives, and we have got to find ways, and that's the beauty of civic media, that it provides an alternative to the right-wing voices out there, I believe, at least. I mean, that's my take. I mean, beyond that, I'm not sure. I mean, I belonged to a labor union. We lost our collective bargaining rights. It annoys me no end that Scott Walker is on Twitter just yapping away about freedom and other things. My God, he must be looking for a job in the White House or something. Maybe they can give him a waiter's position, you know, something like that.
Give me a coffee,
boy. It really is the case that we've reached an abyss. I thought we reached the abyss a few years ago. It's like we're out on a gangplank right now. And working people know they're being screwed. They have to be offered some kind of vehicle, some kind of way of joining together and changing it. The ambitions of Americans, the aspirations of Americans, are reflected in the fact that labor unions, even though they remain weak, are very popular ideas right now, very popular institutions. I mean, if the Democrats are smart, they're going to make every effort to invite labor into their conversations about the future of the DNC and the party, and they're going to turn the Democratic Party back into the party of the working class. That is my view. Other than that, immediately we're facing, you know, what was it? Hell and high water. I mean,
well, Harvey, I mean, Donald Trump, I think certainly in this past election and in 2016 as well, capitalized on that. I think he kind of stole some of Bernie Sanders' thunder a bit. Now, he didn't follow through with what he was saying he was going to do, but
yes, he did.
He certainly, you know, he tapped into that, right? And a lot of folks went. Same thing again in this last election. I think folks are certainly, you know, their instincts are correct. They haven't gotten a raise in a generation. You know, some of these things are right there in front of us. The problem is, who's to blame for it besides us? Then what's the circumstance to change that? And if there's not going to be, if it wasn't Kamala Harris in this time, and maybe, you know, Joe stuck around a little too long and he didn't give Harris or somebody else time to articulate that vision and that message, that is not, you know, it's not going to be the billionaires
Kamala
coming
Harris did
to
not
save
have
you.
That. Kamala Harris had no vision, no message that would have addressed the kinds of things you and I are talking about. Okay. They brought Tim Walz on thinking that would be the way of appealing to working people. What'd they do? They then ran to the center of the political spectrum. No, that's not the way to go about it. By the way, you made a good point. I want to remind everyone, back in 2015 and 16, when Trump was running for president that first time, he was talking, yes, about getting rid of Obamacare, but he said he was going to have a better program. Okay. Now that's interesting.
Well, in 2 weeks. It's always coming in 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks,
man.
Dumb. I swear. 2 weeks. I got it's the best plan.
By the way, that wasn't a compliment to Trump, other than his slyness.
Yeah, well, and he does. I mean, he picked it up and people bought it. And I think to some degree, it's the personality, right? I mean, there is some of that. And he's, whether you like him or not, he has charmed, for lack of a better term, the MAGAs and what's left of the Republican Party. So I think there needs to be that kind of inspiring leader on the Democratic side, man. And I don't know. I haven't seen it yet, Harvey.
No, I haven't seen it yet either. Okay. I mean, there are people out there who would like to pursue the kinds of things we're talking about, but do they have that kind of, but remember the term charisma? I haven't heard that term used in a long time. Yeah. I mean, Donald Trump doesn't have charisma. Okay. He has audacity is what he has, because he can lie and lie and lie and get away with it by portraying it's all going to be better just over the horizon. You watch.
In 2 weeks, Harvey. In 2 weeks. 855.
And by the way, I can't wait to the day next, was it next Monday? The inauguration.
The inauguration.
And then you and I get to talk for an hour about that.
I look forward to it as always, Harvey. 855-752-4842. Let me throw this one out there before we get to the callers and the texters. As mentioned, Pew Research, economic inequality seen as a major challenge around the world. A couple of paragraphs here, Harvey, then I would like your comments. A new Pew Research Center survey of 36 nations finds widespread public concern about economic inequality. And when asked what leads to this inequality, most people across countries surveyed point to the intersection of wealth and politics. A few of the key findings. A median of 54% of adults across the nation surveyed that the gap between the rich and the poor is a, quote, very big problem in their country. 54%. And here's the kicker. Another 30% say it's a moderately big problem. We have 84%. Now again, this is a survey of 36 nations, so USA just being one of them. But 84% of the people say this is a moderately or a very big problem between the gap between the rich and the poor. It's not like this topic is unknown, Harvey. I mean, it's right there in front of us. Everyone knows about it. Everyone's talking about it. You're talking about it all the time. We talk about it. How is this remaining if that's the concern?
Okay. Both right now, the Democratic Party and the labor movement are in desperate need of each other, but they are also in desperate need. You know, I wish the people we're talking about would pay attention to you and me. What can I say? What can I say?
We'll keep
they are in desperate
louder.
Need. They are in desperate need as well of a vision. They have no historical memory. I could sit here talking about FDR, and when's the last time you heard any political figure, not just mention FDR's name, but actually behave in any way reminiscent of FDR, or for that matter, Lyndon Baines Johnson at his best?
Nobody. Okay? No one in my since I've been paying attention the last, say, 20 years, I haven't heard squat.
Right. Exactly. So do we yell louder? Do you and I go network and say, go to your, you know, open your windows and shout like hell or whatever it was? I mean,
right.
No, we have to keep doing it, and we have to encourage people. But it really does require some kind of leadership. And I mean, I thought we'd see more, in quotes, leadership from labor, and not necessarily, you know, in the case like of O'Brien, yeah, O'Brien's his name, right? Who basically gave, you know, a kiss and a hug to Trump at the Republican convention. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had a good line, and then he turned around and he, you know, became a goper.
And then said all the corporate things. Also from Pew, Harvey, a median of 60% believe that rich people having too much political influence contributes a great deal toward economic inequality. I mean, the numbers are there. People know, Harvey. We just got to, I don't know, connect the dots for them.
When we come back from the break, I am going to give you the quote that will answer it all.
All right. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. That's why you come around, man. We need the one answer for everything. Come back with us, 855-75-CIVIC.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. Last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now, 855-752-4842. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Our final segment together. Harvey, you promised me before the break the answer that would solve it all. Professor, please tell us.
In 1936, FDR... was the Democratic Party was clearly going to nominate him anew. And at the Democratic Party convention in Philadelphia, in a gathering held in a stadium, FDR went before the assembled and on radio to the nation and said, referring to those wealthy corporate bosses who were literally trying to take down his presidency. They were spending a lot of money trying to take down his presidency. And there was good evidence that there were conspiracies to try to take out his presidency. Okay. And he said this, and he referred to the rich as the economic royalists. These economic royalists complain that we seek to overthrow the institutions of America. What they really complain of is that we seek to take away their power. Our allegiance to American institutions requires the overthrow of this kind of power. And he added, in vain, they seek to hide behind the flag and the Constitution. In their blindness, they forget what the flag and the Constitution stand for. Now, as always, they stand for democracy, not tyranny, for freedom, not subjection, and against a dictatorship by mob rule and the overprivileged alike. As he said, our allegiance to American institutions requires the overthrow of the power of the economic royalists. When would you ever imagine a president of the United States speaking so honestly about a state of affairs? And indeed, when's the last time you ever heard anybody, you know, in politics, at least mainstream politics, talk about that? He also said in that same speech, he said this, which we all have heard at some point, I'm sure. There is a mysterious cycle in human events. To some generations, much is given. Of other generations, much is expected. This generation of Americans has a rendezvous with destiny. And I think that's absolutely the case. Okay, we may have blown it, is my fear, this time around. Okay, but so far we haven't completely lost hold of democracy.
Harvey,
and we better
could
get
that
it together.
Speech be given today and still mean the same thing?
You bet it could, absolutely. And he actually then, this is interesting. So this is 1936. 8 years later, in a State of the Union message, 1944 is where he proposed the Economic Bill of Rights, okay, which I don't want to go through them all right now. But at the end of that segment of his State of the Union, where he laid out the Economic Bill of Rights to guarantee health care, to guarantee a job at a living wage, to guarantee education, to guarantee a whole host of basic essentials to survival, he said recreation included. But then he went on to say, effectively, I'll paraphrase, and if we fail to do this, here we are, you know, at the end of the war against fascism. If we fail to do this, we've essentially allowed fascism to rule us. In other words, he believed that the future, if it did not include basic fundamental economic rights, would cost Americans democracy. That's why it is absolutely essential that we not only, yes, overthrow, in his words, the power of the economic royalists, but that we create a more progressive social democratic America. That's FDR. I'm only communicating what FDR said, but I believe that those words.
Harvey K, we had a texter here. Andrew says, if the highest tax bracket is doubled to 72% before deductions, those conservatives will call and claim the billionaires will leave the country. And if so, would that be a problem? You know, are you concerned of the Atlas Shrugged attitude? If the taxes went up, then all those economic royalists will take their ball and their bag of cash and go elsewhere?
There was a case during the FDR years where it's called, Alan Minsky and I and others have talked about this. Let's suppose we had elected a truly progressive new administration. Would the bosses, the corporate elite, would they pursue what's called a capital strike? A capital strike is where they hold, even if they don't leave the country, it has to do with holding back investments, which are essential to the American economy. Well, then that says, yeah, as FDR said, you got to overthrow their power. You have to figure out a way to disable them from controlling that kind of wealth and make it subject to public needs in favor of the public good.
Harvey, there's really one answer for it. You want to hear my answer to it? My overall arching Dominic 2025 answer to it all? It's really simple.
This is the punchline of the day.
People need to stop cashing the checks. You know what I mean? Because those people, the billionaire class, their power lies with the checkbook. If you're not buyable, if they can't buy you, what can they do? Don't cash the checks, Harvey. What do you think?
So are you talking about a consumer strike?
Consumers, politicians, wherever it is, wherever the influence comes, whatever pressures there are, stop cashing those checks.
This will make good discussion in the future.
And
the signals from Jess. I don't want to get in the
morning.
We're going to have to put that one off until next Monday. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy from the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Always enlightening, always pleasurable. I look forward to speaking
always
to you next
blast.
Monday. Yeah, for sure. Thank you, Harvey. Thank you, Jess P.S., working the board, doing the hard work as well. Thank you to our fair audience for being a part. We'll be back tomorrow, a little overtime with Maggie Dawn. And stick around right now. Pete Schwabba with Nightlights coming up next. Have a great night. Kiss me, I'm dead inside. Who needs to-
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.